Now, what we're going to begin with Radio Free America 37, is some more information from a book that we dealt with last week called The Nazis Go Underground by Kurt Ries. We are going back to the Second World War in order to understand the historical development of an explicitly fascist political milieu that we began looking at in conjunction with the petroleum and probable intelligence careers of George Bush, the quote X unquote, no, he's certainly former director of the CIA, but it is a truism for any student, anyone knowledgeable about the intelligence community, that one does not become director of Central Intelligence and then sever one's contact with the agency. George Bush appears to have been involved with the CIA for a long time. His career in the petroleum industry appears to have been central to that. This is not etched in stone, but the indications are considerable that that was the case. And there is the distinct possibility that George Bush may have been involved in some way in the assassination of John Kennedy. It is certain at this point that he helped frustrate congressional investigations into possible CIA connections to both Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald. It is a matter of public record that George de Morenshield, one of the white Russians, one of the Galen-related elements that was certainly involved in the Kennedy assassination. He was one of the Oswald babysitters, an individual who spied for Nazi Germany during World War II, and then went to work, in all probability, definitely went to work for U.S. intelligence after World War II. He and George Bush were definitely connected and apparently quite closely, and George Bush is certainly, whether or not he was involved in the assassination of John Kennedy directly, he was certainly involved in the cover-up, and his name crops up in connection with the investigation in a variety of different ways. It was because of George Bush's involvement in an explicitly fascist milieu involving the intelligence community, the petroleum industry, the people from the Galen spy organization and related elements. Reinhard Galen was Hitler's chief of intelligence for the Eastern Front in World War II. At the end of the war, he jumped to the CIA with his entire organization, plus a goodly number of SS graftons. That organization became, in turn, the CIA's Department of Russian and Eastern European Affairs, the sole purveyor of intelligence on that part of the world for the CIA. It then became the de facto NATO intelligence organization, and ultimately it became the West German Intelligence Service in 1956 when the Federal Republic was incorporated, the Bundesnachrichtendienst is what it is called today, and the Galen organization and its development because of their central, their profound effect on U.S. and world history, because of the involvement of Galen elements and elements related to it, such as the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, because of their involvement in the assassination of John Kennedy, their involvement in a number of activities stretching right up to the present, including the dissolution of the Soviet Union and the makeup of the post-Cold War world. We are going to go back and we're going to take a look in a big, big way at the events which gave rise to the Galen organization, its incorporation into the United States, and next week we're going to take a look at in detail at the massive effect that that organization has had not only on the United States, but on world history in general. This evening, we're going to begin in looking at the history of the formation of this explicitly fascist milieu that we've been looking at for the past several weeks. We're going to once again go back to World War II with the book The Nazis Go Underground, with which we dealt at considerable length last week. And we're going to take a look at the Nazi industrialists' plans to go underground. We're going to take a look at plans on the part of those industrialists to ostensibly divorce themselves from Adolf Hitler, thereby losing the stigma of Nazism. And we're also going to look, and this is the most important aspect of this, at their plans to hook up, to continue networking with many of the industrialists and financiers in both Britain and in particular the United States, with whom they had done a good deal of business and with whom they were quite cozy for many years leading right up to the Second World War. In the first two Radio Free America shows, in the Uncle Sam and the Swastika Archive show, as well as the archive show called Uncle Sam and Il Duce, I dealt with what I referred to as a transatlantic industrial and financial axis, which was deeply involved with the fascist powers of Europe, chiefly Nazi Germany, but the others as well. They were not only involved in business dealings with Nazi Germany and the other fascist powers, but many of these same industrialists and financiers were also very supportive of fascism politically as well. That transatlantic industrial and financial axis, and I use the term axis advisedly, is going to be front and center this evening. We're going to take a look at the Nazi industrialists and financiers who were going underground, how the connections that they had formed under the auspices of various cartel agreements with Western industrialists and financiers, we're going to take a look at how those connections figure in the formation of this particular fascist milieu that we took a look at in conjunction with the assassination of Kennedy. George Bush is part and parcel to that milieu. That is a milieu which has been in absolute control of the United States from November 22, 1963 to the present, and a lot of the sorry things that have been happening in recent decades or as a direct result of that explicitly fascist milieu. We're going to take a look, as I said, in 1944 at Kurt Reese's ruminations concerning this fascist milieu and how it figured to operate in terms of the Third Reich going underground. Following that, we're going to take a look at one of the most important and most evil people in the 20th century, an individual who has had a profound effect on American history, namely Alan Welch Dulles. Alan Dulles was one of the members of the Sullivan and Cromwell law firm, one of the individuals whose Nazi industrial and financial connections we looked at considerable length in Uncle Sam and the Swastika. Alan Dulles was a key operative for the Office of Strategic Services, specifically that World War II U.S. intelligence agency had as the manager of its Swiss operation in Bern, Switzerland, none other than that very same Alan Dulles. We're going to take a look at how Alan Dulles performed in a limited way with Sullivan and Cromwell. We're going to take a look at his fascist sympathies and fascist dealings, although very briefly, because we looked at those in the aforementioned archive show, Uncle Sam and the Swastika. And in particular, we're going to take a look at how Alan Dulles, when he was head of the Bern, Switzerland office of the OSS, we're going to take a look at how he was networking with German-American and German industrialists and financiers, individuals who were part and parcel, as was Alan Dulles, to this transatlantic industrial and financial axis that I've been discussing for, well, many years on the program, but that we've been focusing on the last couple of weeks in particular. We're going to take a look at some people who were operating as spies for one of the factions of Third Reich intelligence, namely the Abwehr under Admiral Wilhelm Canaris, that's spelled C-A-N-A-R-I-S. The Third Reich's intelligence system, just like our intelligence system, was somewhat factionalized, although the Third Reich intelligence groups worked together, there were also differences. The Canaris faction was largely identified with the German aristocracy, the traditional German officer corps, with the Junkers, the dominant landed interests in Germany, and although they certainly worked very closely with the main elements of the Nazi Party and with the Sicherheitsdienst, the SS intelligence service, and some of the more venal elements of Nazi Germany, there were also certain differences between them. Hitler's, quote, common, unquote, background and the fact that he was not an officer or an aristocrat, plus the doctrinaire racism and the prejudicial aspects of Nazism, sat poorly with some of the industrialists and financiers as well as members of the officer corps. There were also strategic disagreements, in particular between many of the officers and Adolf Hitler. So the two factions, we're going to be looking at two factions of Third Reich intelligence, the Canaris faction and the Sicherheitsdienst SS faction, the most venal factions of the Third Reich. They worked together. There were also some differences, and in particular, as the Nazis prepared to go underground, as it became apparent that the Third Reich faced imminent military defeat, elements of the Canaris faction early on, very early in the war, began reestablishing links with some of the Western powers, the United States, Britain, and so forth, and many of the industrialists and financiers who had been operating with industrialists and financiers in both Britain and the United States resumed these contacts, but some of these industrialists and financiers functioned as spies for both sides. They did channel information, even from an early period, to Great Britain and the United States. At the same time, many of them also functioned as double or triple agents as well. They also were channeling information back to the Third Reich, and beyond that, they were forming links with, they were in discussion, I should say, with industrialists and financiers from the Western nations, and Alan Dulles in particular, concerning plans to save elements of the Third Reich. Basically, they sought, some of the industrialists and financiers, including some of them who were working with the Canaris group, they sought to shake the onus of Hitler, but to retain many of the aspects of fascism, and they sought to hook up with the United States and Britain and to form what was known as the Christian West concept. The idea was for the United States and Britain and France and residual elements of the German Reich to bind together and to set up a cordon sanitaire to prevent the spread of Marxism, communism, Bolshevism, however you would like to call it, across Europe. It should also be noted that these elements were also plotting to overthrow or assassinate Adolf Hitler. The main functionaries in the Nazi Party, including the SS and the Sicherheitsdienst, the SS intelligence service, were well aware of this. They allowed the plots to go forward because they felt the more venal elements of the Third Reich, the SS, the Sicherheitsdienst, the Gestapo, and some of the main Nazi functionaries, felt that it was politically useful to allow these individuals to conduct their plots, even though they were well known to the Nazi intelligence system and leadership and secret police, because they felt that this would be useful from a PR and tactical standpoint in helping to salvage the Third Reich and permit the rebuilding of Nazism. Some of the same contacts with people like Alan Dulles and other Western elements, other Allied elements, some of the same elements of the Canaris organization that were in touch with Alan Dulles and company, were also to serve as a vehicle for the opening of discussions between SS-related elements and Alan Dulles. Now, the two main names we're going to want to look at here are two German spies. One, a German-American, an individual who is part and parcel, as we shall see, to this transatlantic industrial and financial axis. This was a fellow named Gero von Gevernitz, G-A-E-V-E-R-N-I-T-Z. This was an individual who had, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard. He supposedly was working for Alan Dulles as a double agent against Germany, but as we will see, there are substantive indications that, in fact, he was working as a triple agent. Even though Alan Dulles thought he was working for him, there are indications that, in fact, Admiral Canaris was still pulling von Gevernitz's strings. We're also going to take a look at how Heinrich Himmler and Walter Schellenberg, head of Amt 6 of the Sicherheitsdienst, that's the SS intelligence service, Walter Schellenberg, S-C-H-E-L-L-E-N-B-E-R-G, was head of the overseas intelligence branch of the Sicherheitsdienst, and he was well aware of the so-called resistance, some of the Canaris-related elements that were plotting against Hitler and planning thereby to salvage elements of the Third Reich in a non-Hitler, non-Nazi Reich, so to speak. And Himmler and Walter Schellenberg utilized some people such as Hans Bernd Gisevius, one of the associates of Gero von Gevernitz, to make introductions through von Gevernitz to Alan Dulles for representatives of the SS. In addition to Gero von Gevernitz, the Dulles contact that we're going to be looking at this evening, the other main name, the other person who was conducting negotiations with Alan Dulles, was a fellow named Prince Max von Hohenlohe, H-O-H-E-N-L-O-H-E. This particular individual was specifically serving as a diplomatic-slash-intelligence representative of the SS, and he was in direct contact, as was Gero von Gevernitz, with Alan Dulles. And this resistance group, when resistance belongs in quotes here, really this was a group that was seeking to salvage the Third Reich by dissociating itself from the more extreme elements like Hitler and the SS, this resistance group, which ultimately became a vehicle for the introduction of those very same elements to Western intelligence, and in Alan Dulles in particular, in the person of von Hohenlohe, these contacts between Alan Dulles of the OSS, between people like Gero von Gevernitz and the interests he represented, and the interests represented by SS diplomatic representative Prince Max von Hohenlohe, these led to the Christian West concept. As I said, that was an idea to shed Hitler in some of the overt ethnic prejudice aspects of the Third Reich, and to form a union between the residua of the Third Reich, minus Hitler and at least ostensibly the SS, and for them to hook up with the United States, Britain, and France, and to form an anti-communist coalition with Germany as a cordon sanitaire, as a bulwark against the westward spread of communism. This was the Christian West concept, which Alan Dulles wholeheartedly supported, and which was under formation during the course of these negotiations in the middle of the Second World War. The Christian West concept and its advocates, who were known as Christian Westers, became ultimately the seed concept for NATO. And although the initial contacts between Alan Dulles and the interests he represented and the Third Reich were in the person of Gero von Gebernitz and people associated with the Canaris group, the faction of German intelligence that was associated with the German aristocracy, the officer corps, the Junkers, the vested landed interests in Germany. Ultimately, these same contacts led to direct diplomatic negotiations between Alan Dulles and the most reprehensible elements of the Third Reich, namely the SS and Gestapo-related elements, again in the person of Max von Hohenlohe, Prince Max von Hohenlohe. The Christian West concept, again, which grew directly out of negotiations between American, British, and German elements of this transatlantic industrial and financial axis, gave this Christian West concept, was the seed concept out of which the North Atlantic Treaty Organization grew. And as we're going to see, the next element that we will be looking at this evening, and this will set the stage for an examination of the formation, the explicit formation in the United States of the milieu that we looked at in connection with the assassination of President Kennedy. This milieu is in control of American and world politics at this time. With the incorporation into the United States of the Galen Organization, as we shall see, the Christian West concept became a most unchristian concept, because as we will be seeing this evening, the Galen Organization, to a large extent, served not only as a vehicle for the resurrection of Nazism to a considerable extent, but it served as a Trojan horse. Literally, it served as a vehicle for the conquest of the United States, not by overt military means, but rather by covert and political means. And this particular conquest, again, was not affected by force of arms. It was, to a certain extent, with the political assassinations, but rather it was affected through the formation of political and strategic concepts. And the Galen Organization, as we will see in an examination of a long article from Covert Action Information Bulletins, issue number 35, the Galen Organization literally served as a vehicle for the Odessa, for the post-World War II SS underground, to penetrate the United States, its political and military and intelligence structures. That penetration was massive, and the effects of that penetration came to a head on November 22nd, 1963. Those effects, unfortunately, are very much with us today. So the last major item in this installment of Radio Free America 37 that we're going to be looking at concerns the Galen Organization as a Trojan horse, literally as a vehicle for the conquest of the United States. That's why I call this program How the United States Lost the Second World War. And we will be looking at the same time, in conjunction with that, at the Galen Organization as a vehicle for the introduction of the Odessa, the post-World War II SS underground, into the United States, and as a vehicle for protecting the underground elements of the SS around the world. Next week, we will specifically be looking at how the Galen Organization affected the United States, not only its strategic and military policy, but its political policy as well. And this will set the stage. Next week, we'll set the stage for our examination of how these elements, what led to these elements combining up with the American far right, the defense industry, elements of the petroleum industry, to overthrow the legitimate constitutional authority of the United States, which happened on November 22nd, 1963. So again, what we're looking at tonight, we're going to begin by taking a look at the Nazi industrialists and financiers' plans to go underground, how their proposed resumption of contacts, actually these contacts were ongoing throughout World War II, how their link-ups with industrialists and financiers in the West, in particular the United States, figured into their plans to salvage the Reich. We're going to take a look at Alan Dulles, part and parcel to this transatlantic industrial and financial axis. His negotiations with chiefly Guido von Gebernitz. We're going to take a look at his negotiations with Max von Hohenlohe and the formation of the Christian West concept. And that grew directly out of this transatlantic industrial and financial axis that we are examining. We're going to take a look at how this led to the Galen Organization being introduced into the United States. And among the things we'll be looking at in that context is not only the Galen Organization as a Trojan horse and as a vehicle for the introduction of the Odessa into American military and political life, but we're going to take a look at that very same Guido von Gebernitz and how the idea for recruiting German officers, including and especially Galen, was communicated by him to General Siebert, who was the first American military officer to begin working with Reinhard Galen even before the mainstream American high command picked up the ball vis-a-vis Reinhard Galen. We will also, by the way, take a look at Galen's close relationship with the SS and Galen's relationship with the aforementioned Walter Schellenberg, head of Amt 6 of the Sicherheitsdienst. That's what we have on tap for this installment of Radio Free America program number 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War. We're going to take a musical break, and then we're going to come back with the main body of this installment.